Last week, we started a series called Last Days Thriving. And it was not called Last Days Surviving because we really believe that we are to thrive, even though oftentimes it feels like it's all we can do just to hang on. But I'll tell you what. I think of I know I may not look this way, but I've run a couple of half marathons in the last few years. It's not a joke. There is no punchline. It is the truth. And I've run two. And my very first one, I wanted to run my half marathon in under 2 hours. And I did it in 2:01:29. And I was a little disappointed. And then, but I learned some things about pacing myself. I learned some things about hydration and all of those things. And then so about a year and a half later, I go to run my second one, and I finished in 2:07, I think it was 48. But this is the interesting thing. Which one do you think I was more proud of? It was the second one. And this is the reason. In the first one, I had met up with some buddies who are much leaner and much faster than I am, and I ran the first half of the race with them. And so by the end, I was falling, I was tired, I think I actually took my shoes off the last little bit, and I just barely stumbled over the finish line. And I was wrecked for a couple days. I was done. The second one, I'd learned how to pace myself. I'd learned how to hydrate better. I had learned how I need to pace in order to keep going, staying strong. And I'll tell you what, that last half mile was my fastest. I hit that finish line hard, and I felt great afterwards. And I feel like that's a picture of us. It's not that we need to spend everything we have just to claw our way across the finish line of faith and get into the gates of heaven, but it's about doing things the right way. It's about thriving through the last days. And today, we're going to be talking about love in the last days. You know, Pastor Tim mentioned last week that the world talks a lot about the end times. There are tons of books, and if you missed it last week, even Homer Simpson got in on some of the action. You see the picture here. The end is near. We know that we're in the end days. The Bible tells us. There's a lot of theologians that would say that the end days actually began with the ascension of Christ. And this whole period of time actually is the end of days. And that seems like way too long to all of us mortals, but to a God who lives outside of time, that's not that long. But here we are. We're living in the last days. But what we... What Pastor Tim shared with us last week is that not all of us will experience the last days, but we all know that we will experience our own last days. And the text that we read from was from Paul, and it was written near the end of his life. And we're going to revisit the text that we were at last week, but before we get there, I want to share with you guys a little picture of what life was like in Rome at that moment. What were some of the things Paul was experiencing, and what would cause him to pen these words? So let's talk about Rome for a moment, this era of time in which he lived. At that time, Rome was ruled by Nero. And I don't know if you guys know anything about Nero, but he was an evil man, to say the least. He forced one of his childhood teachers to commit suicide. He had his mother murdered. He murdered his first wife, and he allegedly murdered his second wife while she was pregnant. He was a bad, bad guy. And so, you know that phrase, speed of the leader, speed of the team? I think this is just a picture of what was going on with the whole nation. There's an ancient Roman historian, Tacitus, and he wrote this about Nero. Besides being put to death, Christians were made to serve as objects of amusement. They were clothed in the hides of beasts and torn to death by dogs. Others were crucified. Others were set on fire to illuminate the night when daylight failed. Nero had thrown open his grounds for display, and when he was putting on a show and circus, he would drive around in his chariot. And all this to give rise to a feeling of piety, even whose men whose guilt merited the most horrific punishment. For it was felt if they were being destroyed not for public good, but to gratify the cruelty of an individual. Let me say that again. They were destroyed not for public good, but to gratify the cruelty of an individual. There was a lot of bad going on, a lot of evil. And it started at the top. The other thing about Rome is they were a society given to entertainment. And how many of you guys have seen a picture of the Colosseum? Not the one in LA, but the one in Rome. The demand was so strong for entertainment that it was during this period of time near the end of Paul's life They had the necessity to begin the planning for the building of the Colosseum. So it was in its planning stages at this time, and in that era they were known for their extravagant plays, but really what it was is it was violence that took center stage. And before the Colosseum was built, many historians believe that the violence was even worse before the Colosseum was built, because by the time the Colosseum was built, people had been monetizing this, and they didn't actually want their warriors to die as frequently. But during this era of time that Paul was alive, it was even much more brutal than the things that we hear about and see that was happening in the Colosseum. You know, there was battles to the death. Christians were fed to lions. People were just feeding on brutality. The other thing we know about Rome is that it was a highly sexualized culture. I could give you guys a whole lot of details, but it would just merely be for shock value. I would say use your imagination, but don't use your imagination. It was a highly sexualized society, and there were few moral boundaries for their depravity. But just a few things that were happening in that time is that pedophilia was an acceptable practice. Pornography had its beginnings at that time through paintings and statues, and they were available for some of the elite, and it would not be uncommon to find them in their homes. Also, prostitution was completely legal and acceptable. And the thing that was happening with prostitution in that culture is that it was mostly slaves and or freed slaves that were engaging in this practice. From a religious standpoint, it was very dark. There was some Christian influence and there was some Jewish influence, but largely they were a polytheistic culture, meaning that they worshipped many gods. You could really just do whatever you wanted and say you prayed to this person and you were religious, but it was really filled with cultic practice, and it prevailed all areas of their society. The result of all of this, though, is that there was really great religious tension that was happening. The Romans had their way of life, the Jews had their practices, and the Christians were trying to, like, we'll just use the word rebel. They were trying to rebel against the man. You know, they were trying to stick it to the man. You know, because they knew that they had the real message and the real saving power of Jesus Christ. So there was this tension going on. Also in this time, just as something that was mounting, is that Paul was executed just about 3 years prior to when Rome destroyed the temple. So there's a lot of yuck, a lot of junk going on in this time. Also, you have to now get to Paul. At this stage in his life, we understand that this was about the fifth time that he had been arrested or imprisoned. And we know that when he wrote 2 Timothy, he was awaiting judgment by Nero. And he was held in the Mamertine prison. We have a picture of that here this morning. I cut it off, but there's actually a building built now on top of the prison. But you can still go see it there today. And this next picture here, this is believed to be the cell where Paul spent the last 2 years of his life. And let me just read you this description. The Mamertine prison was also known as the House of Darkness. Few prisons were as dark, as dank, and as dirty as the lower chambers where Paul occupied. Its neglect, darkness, and stench gave it a hideous and terrifying appearance. I can just imagine Paul sitting here in this place. The religious turmoil, the sin that prevails, being stuck in this dark, stinky place. And it is in this place that he penned these words. 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 5. But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having forms of godliness but denying its power, having nothing to do with them. We can see that the time that we live in, there's nothing new. But here's the thing. Even with all of this opposition, all of these things that were really real and really happening at this time, the early church was able to thrive. And it was through them being able to thrive that we're sitting here worshiping Jesus today. So I see that things should be no different for us. And so this morning I said we're going to talk about love. So what we want to do this morning is look at how love gives us the ability or hinders us from being able to thrive in the last days. So if you can go to the next slide there. It's very clear that there are three things three areas that we will have love missing in the final days. It's that people will not have love, they will not be lovers of the good, and they will not love God. Let's talk about the first one, without love. I would say that as our society as a whole, we are moving towards a place where where love does not prevail. There's this prevalent phrase out there that love wins, and I think it does, but the problem is there isn't enough of it. 2 weeks ago, my wife made a post on Facebook, and it was a rather harmless post about the Chargers. And you wouldn't believe within a few moments the vile profanity that it elicited from a number of people. Just hate. So she deleted it pretty soon after. But it's like, have you guys heard of internet trolls? If you haven't, the Lord is blessing you. But there's so many people out there that just want to spread hate. There's no love. They can say whatever they want because they can do it anonymously. Last week, we had Carla come up and talk about Celebration of Life Sunday. And we know that there is a lack of love for life. And it's not just with babies, it's with old people. Both get neglected and marginalized. There is a lack of love for life. The other thing that just is prevalent, and I don't know if you guys feel like it, but I do. Does it feel like sometimes there's just hate in the air? Like, people aren't really angry about the thing they're angry about. They're just angry because they want to be angry. They're just looking for a reason to spread hate and to be angry. And the thing is, it's just because love is missing in their hearts. The second thing that will be missing is that they will not be lovers of good. This also means that can be defined that they will be haters of good and hostile to virtue. I was reminded of a situation that has come up in this past year, but I don't know if you guys are familiar with this couple here. This is our vice president. And he has had a policy that he will not go out to dinner alone with any woman other than his wife. And you just type it in real fast in Google, and you will find many articles ridiculing him, calling him names. One of my favorite is that his top crime is gender discrimination. But here is a guy who all he wants to do is protect his marriage and has set boundaries, and the world wants to persecute him, right? Like, that is calling good evil, right? There is no redemption there. This also leads me to the conversation that marriage is under attack from all sides. There's no denying it. And this is why. This is why I believe this to be true. Because I believe that marriage threatens Satan's plan. Because it is in marriage that we come together. It is in marriage that God designed for us to be a family unit. It is in marriage that God designed for us to have children. It is in marriage that God designed us to raise those children to be lovers of Jesus and to perpetuate those ideals and all of those values to the next generation. And Satan knows that if he can weasel his way inside of marriage and disrupt this sanctified thing that God calls holy, he knows that he can destroy a nation, he can destroy a people, and he can keep the next generation from serving Jesus. I was on a call yesterday with our Foursquare district youth representative, and he made this statement, and that is that 80% of evangelical Christian youth will walk away from their faith. It's not totally attributed to this, but I can tell you one of the main reasons is because the family unit is fractured. And they don't have the support. They don't have what they need to get them through, so they turn away from their faith. And the last thing that I'm going to do this morning, if you're a man, raise your hand. Thank you for identifying yourself. We have failed. We have failed. And that's why families are failing. So with each one of us, we need to carry the responsibility that God has placed upon us to lead our family. We need to move forward. We need to love our wives. We need to care for our children. We need to be seeking the Lord and hearing him for what God has for our family. And I will tell you what, men, if we can mobilize, if we can be changed, we won't need youth pastors to get kids saved. Right? Right? Can you go to the next slide? The last is, and I don't feel like I need to say a whole lot about this, but people will not love God. And as I was reflecting back on the history of our nation, we went from a nation that was God-fearing, which transitioned to God-tolerating, and is now aggressively God-intolerant. And I don't think anything else needs to be said, because the God and the name of Jesus have become offensive. So what happens when love disappears? We've now identified that love is gone, and when love is removed, a love must fill the void. So what it gets replaced with are false loves. And so what we see in this scripture here is that there are three false loves that will come in and take this place. So people will be lovers of themselves, they will be lovers of money, and they will be lovers of pleasure. Lovers of self. William Barclay writes, "It is no accident that the first of these qualities will be a life that's centered in self. Love of self is the basic sin from which all others flow. The moment a man makes his own will the center of life, divine and human relationships are destroyed. Obedience to God and charity to men both become impossible." So many of us that live around us are living a life that worships themselves. And we have so many outlets like TwitFaceGram that we can do this, right? It feeds our narcissism. It feeds our love for ourselves. And if you don't know what any of those things are, once again, God has really blessed you. All of these things are helping our society become the most self-serving, self-absorbed, self-centered people that we can be. And this last week, this past Monday, I think Pastor Tim shared this in service last week. We took our twins for their fifth birthday to Disneyland for their very first time. And I apologize, I had intended to put a photo in here, but I completely forgot. But they had check my Facebook. There's plenty of photos there. And we had a really great day. And we get to the teacups. And there's this family, you know, as we're going, you know, as like you do, and all you going around, down, waiting your turn in line. We're following this couple for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes in this line. And the whole time, they had this really nice video camera, an external mic, and I think there was even a light. And it's the mom and the little girl, and they're smiling, and they're doing their thing. And then they'd switch, and he was there doing their whole thing. And it just hit me. I don't know that these are what these people were doing, but all I could feel is that they were working to capture something that they could put out there for other people to see. It wasn't that they were trying to capture the enjoyment of the moment. They were trying to fabricate something that would look magical so other people would believe it was magical. And so I began to think about this and ask myself this question. When we're out doing these things, are we actually concerned with creating memories? Or are we trying to create envy in the hearts of others to falsely fill the love and void in our own hearts? Let me say that one more time. Are we creating a memory, or are we trying to create envy in the hearts of others to falsely fill the love void in our own hearts? And let me tell you, I've been guilty because I've at times wanted people to think my life is amazing, right? But it's what God really concerned with is the motives of our heart. It's the love of self, the love of self. Second thing is the love of money. This is like not loving God. I don't know that we have to expand a whole lot on this, but the love of money has been something that has permeated societies since people exchanged bones for buffaloes, I don't know what they did when they lived in caves, but, you know, I had a special rock, and I'm sure there was going to be some guy that wants it, right? But what we know is that the love of money is not new, but what we have today are more ways than ever to get it, right? I can start a business from home. I get emails all the time that I can make $1,000 this week. I got an email last week that there's this Indian prince that wants to send me $38 million, and all I have to do is give him my personal information. We can get rich quick. right? And if you're having a problem getting U.S. dollars, we have seen recently that you can just create your own currency, right? That's what the guys at Bitcoin did, and they are loaded now. You just create your own currency, and bam, we're rich. But what we know from 1 Timothy, what Paul said to us just prior to this book, is that for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And for some people, craving money have wandered from true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. I know a few people that have pursued money, and their lives are filled with sorrows. Some of the wealthiest people I know are the most miserable people I know and unhappy because it's the love of money. It's a false love. The third is a love of pleasure. And if you go back to actually the Greek roots, the way this could be interpreted is that you would be a friend of pleasure, very familiar with pleasure. You know, we all know it feels good to feel good, right? Because those 900 count Egyptian cotton sheets, you know, no one wants old scratchy sheets. We need new and we need soft. And you know, a steak just doesn't cut it, especially if you watch the Food Network like I do. 20 years ago, you just grill a steak and it's good. Now you've got to get the thyme and the butter and you got to sear it off and you got to finish it in the oven and you got to baste it. And, you know, we want the tastiest, we want the softest, we want the most comfortable. It just feeds something inside all of us that we want pleasure. This was a staggering statistic that I saw. We want pleasure, and part of pleasure, much like Roman culture, is we want to be entertained. The Bureau of Labor Statistics released this, that in 2016, and it's gone up since then, the average household spent $2,900 on entertainment that year. Multiply that by the 26 million households in America, that would mean that Americans in 2016 spent $378 billion to be entertained. Right at the Colosseum. Right in the Octagon. Right at the Pantages Theater in LA. You know, we love to be entertained. And it's not just entertainment where we find pleasure. Also, like the Roman culture, we are a highly sexualized culture. I was up here 9 months ago and talked about technology and the way that pornography is destroying our families. Men, let's get it handled. Let's train up our boys in the way that they should go and not model something that they shouldn't do. This is gross. But there's a big movement that pedophilia is being normalized in our society. We're not going to go out and murder people. We're not going to go out and hang people. But you know what we do need to do? We need to protect our kids. And we need to pray God's protection over every single one of them. Not just our own, but the ones in our larger families, the ones that are in our churches, the ones in our communities. And we have to protect our kids. We have to know who their friends are and where they're going and who they're associating with online. We have to protect our kids. Because we know that in the last days, people will be given to pleasure and love will be removed from their hearts and replaced with evil. So we have to protect our kids. When we lose love, we exchange for a false love. And when things turn terrible, our natural tendency is to turn inward and to self-preserve. And when we are self-preserving, that puts us into survival mode and we are not thriving. So the question remains today is how do we thrive? How do we get out of this horrible cycle of serving ourselves, giving in to all of the things that we would want? I feel like as Paul as Paul's writing these words, he's groaning for redemption for the world because he knows people are crying out for something more. I feel like there's a simple scripture that answers this, and this comes from Matthew 16, 24. Jesus said to his disciples, "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must turn from your selfish ways, take up your cross, and follow me." There is no way that we can be true disciples of Christ without waging war against our own selfish desires. Yay. Yeah. Do the things that we don't naturally want to do. So how do we wage war? The first way is really, really simple. And that is to spend time with Jesus. We cannot be like someone we don't spend time with. It's impossible. I was thinking back to my dating, engagement, and marriage to my wife. When we got together, we had some similar interests because we were associated. You know, she went to church and I went to church. Cool, we should date. And then as things progressed, you're living life together, and all of a sudden you realize that you're becoming more and more like each other. Oh, we like the same sports. Oh, we now are cooking the same food, so we like the same foods. And all of a sudden you just realize that you're becoming more and more alike, right? So it should be with our relationship with Christ, because after all, marriage is the model that he gave us, that is which to be our relationship with him. So we need to spend time with this man. And let me tell you, because I want to know, how many feel like you spend a really adequate amount of time with the Lord? Awesome. I'll tell you what, it's a struggle for me every day. So don't just think because I am employed by a church that I am just firing on all cylinders with the Lord all the time, because it is absolutely not true. So I actually did something for myself this year, and I shared this with our youth group a few weeks ago. I made myself a good old-fashioned New Year's resolution. And it was really simple. And I hope that it would just inspire someone to follow suit. And it's this. It's 10-10-10. Every day, my goal is to spend 10 minutes reading the Word, 10 minutes in prayer, and 10 minutes writing about it. And it's really simple. It could be 5-5-5 or 1-1-1. Because the reality is we just need to do more. We have a God that loves us passionately and wants to spend time with us.
So it could be 30-30-30?
It could be 30-30-30. Or 1 hour, 1 hour, 1 hour.
I'm saying I did that this week.
It could be any of those things. But the reality is we have to spend time with Jesus if we expect to be changed. That's it. That's it. And then the other thing is, model it for your kids. It's another area I'm not perfect at. But I can tell you the times that we get out our little devotional, or the times that just ask the kids, what did you learn about in Sunday school today? And we get to dialogue those things and talk about the principles of Jesus. And then I get reminded of a way that principle, because I've lived a number of years now, has impacted my life. And then I get to pass that on to them. We need to model this thing to our kids. It's part of the reason why a few months ago I said, put your phone down and look at each other and have a conversation. Car rides are for conversation. Dinner is for talking. I can't even remember what the three were. They were really clever. trust me. But we have to engage our children. It's not just our relationship with the Lord, but we are leading them. We are leading them so that they don't become part of that 80% statistic. The second thing is to invest in others. I could also say build relationships with people. An even more simple term would just be make friends. Because I'll tell you, I've heard it said that social media makes our close friends distant and our distant friends closer. But what that means is that no one is really close. And what we need, We need people who are close with us in proximity and relationally. We need those people around us. We had our Gabriel family, who we've been helping and caring for and praying for these last couple weeks. There was a number of you that rose up and took them meals because of relationship. Amelia, I know, took some meals to another family in our congregation this past week. And we didn't even know about it because it's just relationship. It's people caring for one another. And let me say this. It's hard to spread hate to people when you are in close relationship with them. Let me say that again. It's hard to spread hate towards someone when you're in relationship with them. Since I was a young boy, I was taught that all Raider fans were evil. And the problem was I didn't know any. So, of course, I believed it to be true because it's just a scary bunch of people dressed up like evil and spikes. And I knew a guy that got stabbed at a Raider game, so obviously they're all evil. But then the Lord called us to Santa Maria. And I got to meet real Raider fans that live in real proximity to me. And you know what I found? I found people that love Jesus. Amen. Right? They're real people. And it's just a funny story, but it's just a picture of how we can judge people, how we can think things about a certain people group. Maybe they live in a certain area, act a certain way, and we will think that way about them until we really get to know them. The thing that's so hard about investing in others and building relationship is that it's going to cost us something. It's going to cost us our own vulnerability. Because you can only go, hey, how are things going? Good, good, for so long. But eventually you have to start talking about your life. And it costs you your heart. It costs you maybe getting hurt. But you have to do it. You have to do it. Beto, we raise your hand. Is Amelia in here? Is she teaching? She's there. It's okay. It's okay. We'll cut that part out of the message. Hector and Dina, would you guys raise your hand? I'm putting these guys on the spot today, and maybe there's others happening. But today, these guys have community group. And if you're not involved in a community group, just come to one of them after service. I know them personally, and I know that they would be more than willing to have you join them as they go to a park and open their home, because there really is no better way to get to know people and to build relationship than to spend time with them. It works with our Lord Jesus, it works with our spouse, and it works with our friends. We have to spend time together. I hope it was okay I did that, guys. So we're going to spend time with Jesus, invest in others, and the final thing this morning is that we have to serve those that are around us. I'd like to read you this passage from John 13. Before the Passover celebration, Jesus knew that his hour had come to leave this world and return to his Father. He had loved his disciples during his ministry on earth, and now he loved them to the very end. And I want to stop there for a second. It didn't say he loved them minus the one that betrayed him. He loved them all to the very end. It was time for supper, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had given him authority over everything and that he had come from God and would return to God. So he got up from the table, took off his robe, wrapped a towel around his waist, and poured water in a basin. And then he began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that had been around him. we need to wash more feet. Maybe it's literally washing feet, but it makes it really hard to serve people when you don't know people. That's why we've got to make friends. That's why we've got to get in community groups. That's why we've got to serve together in the children's ministry. That's why we have to do all these things. Because as we get to know people, we find ways to serve them. We find needs. And you know where I think we should start? Is right in our own home. Serve the people that are under your own roof. Because I can tell you that the people that we can be most callous towards maybe sleeping right next to us. And we need to find a way to serve them. We need to find a way to serve them. We need to serve people everywhere we go. Because I can tell you that it is through these things, as we spend time with the Lord, as we build relationships and invest in others, and as we serve them, love will grow in our hearts. As we spend time with Christ, we will be like Christ. And we will be able to share that love. And that is how we eradicate selfishness. That is how we get selfishness out of our lives, because we have to actually physically do something that costs us something. And that is how we war against ourselves and our own desires. I guess this could all be simple as this. Love God and love people. And this will combat selfishness in our hearts and cause us to thrive no matter how dismal the situation seems to be. Amen. I would like to invite you guys. We're gonna worship as we close this morning. So would you just please stand and we're just going to worship for a few moments this morning.